What up, Donut Squad, and welcome to
Holy Matrimony, a podcast where we have the whole conversation about the humor,
holiness,
and hardships of marriage.
My name is Daniel Glaze.
And I'm Anna Glaze.
And we are that Catholic couple. And today's guests are Adam and Kate Eichelberger.
Yep, because Kate is an English teacher, and she would get really mad if you said that grammatically incorrect.
Which I have four times before this recording.
Yes. So Kate and Adam are good friends of ours, and not to simplify who they are, but basically Kate is a Catholic feminist who veils at Mass.
And Adam was either a defensive or offensive lineman. I can't remember. But now he is a tattooed youth minister, and they are awesome people. And I'm very excited we have this conversation.
Enjoy.
So you're just gonna sit there and crochet?
I mean, I'll talk.
Well, you're a multitasker is what I hear.
Mm-hmm. I have to do something else to focus. It just helps. Also, the children are asleep, and so this is my chance.
The children, one of them.
Okay. The child who unravels it is asleep.
The one that's the problem.
That's so good.
That is hilarious. Okay, well, let's get started. Let's introduce our guests.
Go ahead. You want to do it?
Sure. Go ahead. Okay, so Adam... We have the wonderful Eichelbergers. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, great. I always want to make sure. I'm like, is that a real like German name? That's German. No? Whatever.
Sure.
Whatever it is. Whatever that's it can funny. Be.
And is it Adam or is it Augie? Because I know you as both.
I know
you as both.
I don't know. Like, Augie kind of got retired a little while ago. I'll still answer to it, but nobody called me that here.
In New York.
Fair enough. Okay, Adam.
You can go with Augie.
Adam.
Adam. The son Adam. Of me.
Okay, so... Person. So do the intro read that we have.
Yeah, okay. So Adam is a Catholic speaker, youth minister, and ministry developer. He co-founded Nameless Ministries, which helps churches center on a real relationship with Jesus and the church while also helping their ministers recharge batteries. And his wonderful wife, Kate, often refers to him as her handsome, holy, hilarious husband. Lots of H's in there.
Kind of like our podcast.
Oh, Holy Matrimony.
Oh, it's meant to be.
Humor, holiness, and hardships.
Yep, okay.
And Kate has served in the Jesuit Volunteer Corps. She worked as a social media marketing manager and also at a crisis pregnancy center. I really want to talk about that. That sounds amazing, and it's something that I've always been interested in. She's also taught in the classroom with the most trying of the most trying middle schoolers. She escaped the system, and she rules Twitter with her holy and challenging feminism. You say that we should all be feminists, and I completely agree. And you also recently posted a video of your daughter chanting.
She corrected that. She said we should smash
the patriarchy. Yes. Although, can we get her to start chanting that?
We're working on it.
Nice. So let's start.
Okay. Yeah. We haven't had a guest on in a while.
I know, I'm a little rusty. Oh well.
And I'm also very tired.
It's okay.
But that's fine.
Okay, so was that good? Is there anything else that you want to fill us in your life? Where are you? I mean, do you want to say where you live? I know one
do
of you
Do you
want to
give your
it?
Address?
Yeah.
We can use
we live in upstate
number.
New York.
You live upstate
in New York. In a Rust Belt city in upstate New York.
Nice. Oh, nice. Okay.
But one of you hates it, or both of you hate it.
Or none of you hate it.
I grew up here, so I have ambivalent feelings.
Okay.
I don't hate Syracuse. I hate snow.
He hates winter.
Oh. And you're
I hate six and a half months a year where I'm just trapped indoors in sadness and freeze.
Yeah, it's better when it's 4.5 months a year where you're trapped indoors, because if you go outside, you'll cook.
Yeah, because that was AZ, Arizona, right? Arizona?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's where we were before,
Wow, you went like the complete opposite.
Oh, yeah.
Like one of the hottest parts of Houston, one of the hardest parts of America, all the way to... The tundra.
It's definitely the frozen tundra right now.
Oh, man. You're just now starting, right? The thick of it? Or no? You've been in
the snow.
No, it's the first legit snowfall was, what was that, Thursday?
Mm-hmm.
Thursday night, and then, like, school was canceled Friday. That was the first snow day of the year.
Hmm.
Poorly planned, because you already had Veterans Day off, and they have the 2 days off for Thanksgiving. It was a waste of a snow day. And you gotta wait until the dark days of February when you're like, oh my god, there's no holiday forever and I hate everything. That's when you need the snow days.
Spoken like a true Yankee.
Who taught high school for 9 years?
So. Yeah,
fair enough.
You've been there. You've been there before. Yeah.
Okay, so we always start these podcasts with guests on how did you meet? Because I really want to hear the story, because we met you at a good friend of ours' weddings,
right.
wedding, and we haven't had a chance to really like get to know you guys.
I know.
I'm excited for this podcast to actually make that happen.
Yeah,
we've been friends online.
We've been friends online for a while now, especially
friends
on the interweb. So I'm really excited, to talk to y'all more about it and get to know you a little bit better. So tell us
how did you begin? Yes.
All right, so I'll start, and you can kind of jump in on this.
Sure.
So we initially met. I was speaking at an XLT in Tucson, and Kate had moved from New York to Phoenix, and then from Phoenix to a small town by Tucson called Sierra Vista. It's a town, Sierra Vista. And she was serving on a,
core team.
And she was serving on a core team there, and she was chaperoning teens who came up for the XLT, and I was speaking. And I made a joke. It's just this, like, it's a very dumb joke.
It was funny.
And she laughed loudly, and it kind of, like, it broke my flow a little bit. And because I don't know why, but I feel like every time my flow gets interrupted, I have to pick on somebody. And so I was like, fine, it's your own fault. And so I made fun of her for her laugh. And then I remember this part very distinctly. At the end of it, she came over, and I was talking to some people. And she was like standing there very awkwardly. And I was like, I was like, hi. And I was like, oh, she's a babe. And then she was like,
I was much skinnier then.
She looked at me and she said, she stuck her hand out like this. And she said, my name is Kate. Your talk was good. It was very good. It's nice to meet you. And like, she, it was like this super awkward, it was the most awkward handshake ever. And I was like, hello, beautiful robot. And I shook her hand. And then
what you can't see if you're listening to the podcast and you're not getting the Patreon is I'm just shaking my head. I have a different memory of how things went, but
tell them.
So first, for the laugh was legit. Like, I definitely so I am the oldest of 8 kids. I have 7 younger brothers and sisters. There's 5 girls and 3 boys in my family. And my mother's maiden name is Anselm, and so the women in my family have what my brothers kindly refer to as the Anselm cackle. And when we laugh, we have 2 levels. It's either like a faint little chuckle, or it's like a and like when I think something's really funny, that's how I laugh. And so he was like, okay, thanks. But I did go and introduce myself, and I probably was a little bit stiff because I did think that he was cute and I liked his talk, but I have a degree in English, and I taught English. I did not say it was good twice. That did not happen. I said, I really liked your talk. I thought you made excellent points, and you were funny. I'm Kate.
Nice. Wait, so Adam was speaking. You were actually the speaker at the XLT. That's why your flow got ruined. It wasn't just like, oh, we were at a dinner or something.
No. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I was the speaker. And then, so she laughed she gave me the cackle.
Good
and
cackle.
then I busted her out for it, and then we had this very awkward handshake. And then I think it was maybe a month or 2 later, Ike and Dolo was playing a concert at the same church that I spoke at.
The Newman Center
at the Newman Center in Tucson. And so I was talking with him and helping him move some stuff, and she was hanging out. And I made reference to this person I know who she also knew from New York. Like, so, and it was this really awkward moment. She's like, you know that guy? And
no,
like,
I think I never
know. And I said, she's like, you know that guy? I was like, yeah, of course I do. And she cackled again in my face. And then she got her phone out and called her sisters. And she's like, you can't believe who this guy knows.
Who I'm talking about right now.
And then they all were cackling on speakerphone.
There was only 2 of us. It was just me and Colleen.
Still
a lot of cackling.
Yeah. And then after that, we met at like a training thing, like a kind of a professional development thing for youth ministers.
And we were sitting at the table, and we were by far the youngest people there. And there was a couple of us at the table. And we were all like, I was friends with 1 or 2 of them, and I didn't know Adam very well. I'd only met him twice. And so we're kind of like passing notes and messing around, because like that's what you do when like all the 50-year-olds are like, but how do we reach the young people? And like, oh my God.
Social media is evil.
That children like guitars at mass.
So not to date it too much, but it wasn't so much like social media is evil. It was more like, we need more guitars and felt banners. Like,
yes.
Those times.
Gotcha. Okay.
felt banners is the most.
God bless them, and they do important work, and they've been doing it forever, and they have a great heart for the kids, and probably we're going to hell for mocking them, but good Lord, can they just retire?
You're not wrong.
Felt banners is the most accurate description I've ever heard of, like, boomers.
I think that should be the new nickname for boomers in the church, the felt banners.
It's so real.
Legit.
So real.
Okay. So then how did y'all become you after y'all met and all that stuff?
So we were like kind of passing notes and stuff. And afterwards I had like an hour and a half drive back to Sierra Vista, and I was kind of standing there and he had my number, and I was like, man, I'm kind of hungry. Like, I don't know. You doing anything for dinner? And he was like, I don't know. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Actually, I think more specifically, I was like, yeah, I've got plans. Like, I was going to go, I was going to go meet somebody to go eat.
I'm obviously fishing for, like, invite me to dinner.
You're just throwing yourself at him, basically, at this point.
And I was just like, and so, okay, bye.
Yeah, he really was. And so then I got down to Sierra Vista, and he texted, and he was like, I'm going to keep your number. And he's like, I'm saving your address. And I was like, yeah, kind of bummed that you didn't invite me to dinner just now or whenever it was. And he was like, oh. And then we started dating.
Yep. And then we went on our first date on August 28th,
mm-hmm.
2010.
The Feast of
St. Augustine. August 28th,
there
2010.
There was a swing, yes.
And then we got married June 11th, 2011.
Yes.
So
About
10 and a half months.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's what?
First date.
10 and a half months.
Like, it's when you meet somebody, first of all, we weren't super young. Like, I was 26 and Adam was 27 when we met. And so it wasn't like we had both like had enough of dating that we knew what we were looking for.
Right.
And when you meet somebody at church, it kind of gives you a leg up, because you're like, all right, I already know that this person, these are the values that they have. And we were both involved in youth ministry, so that also tells you something about who you are and what's important to you. So we were already on the page on so many things. And so it kind of helped us speed it up a bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't have to do that thing where you date for like a year and a half and never talk about God. It's like, oh, you already do that thing. God, this is so much easier.
Yeah.
I love that. So did Adam already have as many tattoos as he has now when you were dating? Yes.
Yeah. He had very little room for new ones. In fact, we have a funny story about his stupid tattoos.
Tell me.
So these ones, we were engaged.
The
and
ones
he
on
said,
his knuckles?
His knuckles, yeah.
Oh, because it's audio. So across Adam's knuckles.
Theater
and
of
now,
the mind.
Mind you, okay, so for podcast people, Adam is a big dude. He's 6'1", and he used to play defense in offensive lineman in football, and so I think for some people that gives you an image of a person. And he's got big hands, and he's got the word forgiven in huge Gothic script across his knuckles, and they're easily, the letters are 2 inches high.
Yeah, those are the biggest letters I've seen on knuckles ever.
And so he said, I want to get forgiven across my knuckles. And I said, great, after the wedding. And then a couple weeks later, he said, yeah, I really want to get that tattoo. And I said, great,
after the wedding.
That picture of the hand on the hand with the rings. And so we weren't living together. Not that I'm judging anybody who does, but that was the choice that we made. And I was down in Sierra Vista and he was in Tucson, and I came up from Tucson and he had the tattoos on his knuckles. And I lost my shit. He like forgot that I had said no.
See, okay, and I will willfully admit that a lot of me is like, I have either selective memory or misremember things or whatever. And I thought that the conversation we had was, she was like, yeah, as long as they're not like too huge, whatever. And then I showed up and I was like, hey, and she was, yeah, I honestly thought, I was like, oh man, I'm going to have to cancel a lot of non-refundable deposits.
Oh no.
Oh, but I mean, she still took me anyway.
But he did have most of the tattoos. So for people who can't see, he had both sleeves. He has a chest tattoo. He had a back piece that had already been started that extends to his whole back, and he does have a very big back. And
baby got back.
Well, I was actually about to ask, does he have any butt tattoos?
No,
I don't.
No, but we are running out of space for the children's tattoos, so.
Oh gosh, that would be so funny.
We're definitely not putting the kids' tattoos on his butt.
Just both, just the faces of your children on your butt.
What happens if we have a third child?
On the face Adam just made, like, bright-eyed kids. Smiling.
So what you can't see or hear is our five-year-old, who was in bed, is now not in bed. And so he's sitting in a chair in the living room near us playing cut the rope on my phone. And he's just making quiet commentary that no one can hear in the background. And so when I said, what if we had a third child, Gus goes, a boy.
Nice. Good job.
I'm going to order that.
So did you end up taking the hand-on-hand picture at your wedding? Or was it just like, no, no go anymore?
I did.
Yeah. Okay. There's you know, like in the list of all the professional photos, there is one where kind of like it's like that. It doesn't look bad. I think we kind of angled it more so that like her hand is
on
top.
Yeah, that's right. My hand was on top.
Okay, okay.
So you can't see as much of my knuckle tattoos.
One thing, and first I just want to say thank you, Lord Jesus. I am so grateful to you that we got married before Pinterest was a thing. But being 7 years post the wedding, I realized my wedding pictures are not that important to me now. There's like three that are really important to me and I really like, and we have them on our walls, and the rest of them, I don't know why I gave that much of a crap. Like, like I made a much bigger deal of that picture than was necessary, but also I asked him not to.
To be fair, though, there was like the
we can continue to rehash this argument. So if you want to change the topic and move on to a new
No, I love it, because so we are new to the tattoo world. Like,
I want to get sleeved up.
We are still clean slate people, and we want tattoos. We are very open to them.
Are you just saying that to impress them? Because I don't know if that's true for you.
You're just lying about yourself to be friends with other people. I'm leaning more towards that. There are some things that I'm like, I really would like a tattoo on, like, certain occasions that I catch myself. So is it true that once you get one, you want more? Is that a real thing?
His skin is more black than it is white. I mean, of course it's true.
For me, I think it depends. I had three tattoos when Adam and I met. I now have five.
Okay.
Are they all on your butt?
That's awkward.
All but one.
No.
So when I used to teach the kids would say, Ms. Eichelberger, would you ever get a tattoo? And I would say, yes, I have tattoos. And then they would go, what are they? And I would say, can you see them? And then they would say, no. And I'd say, exactly. But they're not. They're just like.
She has gangster tattooed across her forehead.
But now I do have a visible tattoo.
She's got that tattoo.
The thug life?
This is thug life.
Thug life.
So now it's just kind of like.
It looks like it says hug life.
The hug life chose me. I didn't choose it.
No, yeah. So, I mean, like.
Okay.
Because I get asked about it a lot. Like, especially like when I talk with teens and stuff, they always want to ask questions about tattoos and so. But
which I love. Yeah, I hope it's not annoying. Okay.
Yeah, what if he's like, shut up, Anna?
No, if it's a bro with a chin strap beard and diamond stud earrings who rolls up and he's like, sick ink, bro. Look at my tribal. That's annoying.
Oh, but okay.
Yeah, so like it. So the whole reason I got into it is two reasons. One, my grandfather, who was in the army, had a lot of like military-related tattoos, and he was just like the baddest ass dude I knew, and I was like, well, I want to be like that. And so that was one. And two, I said ass, whatever.
But that was the part. Was it me?
No, you said shit.
Now
I said shit.
Edit it out.
Was that a secret bet that y'all were placing? Who would cuss first?
Secret bet.
But the other, I for a long time I wanted to apprentice as a tattoo artist, and I started apprenticing as one. But the way I earned my money to like pay for my apprenticeship is I worked in a shop as a body piercer, and so I was just there all the time around professional artists. And one of my best friends, who's like my older brother, is also a tattoo artist. And so he's done the majority of my work. But I just, you know, because I was there, and a lot of times they'd be like, oh, yeah, I thought about doing that. And they'd be like, okay, we'll sit down. And then we just started tattooing. And so, I mean, I came up in a very – but the reason I say that is I came up in the tattoo industry. And so, like, I get real defensive about tattooing. Like, I get – like, I hate bad tattoos. I hate stupid tattoos. What is like for me, when SoundCloud rappers get face tattoos, it really pisses me off because it's like the people who in my life who have like head tattoos or neck tattoos or face tattoos, or my like me, I have hand tattoos. Like you had to earn that. Like you had to do a lot of, you had to get a lot of tattoo work done before that to earn that, right? And like when, like I actually like Post Malone now, but like when Post Malone got like always tired tattooed under his eyes, I was like, bro, what are you doing, man? Like, how is this going to pan out? But then again, the guy's probably made like $20 million. So like, okay, you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
Like, you will earn them at one point. You already have them, but you will earn them. I saw that some people have Jonah Hill tattoos. Like Jonah Hill was interviewed on Seth Meyers. Not that I watched Seth Meyers, but he was on the show. And some people actually have
like faces. His face?
Yeah, like Jonah Hill.
I'm not going to lie. If somebody paid me, I'd probably get Jonah Hill.
Jonah Hill tattoo. Like from Superbad. It's so funny. I think that's hilarious. It's pretty stupid, but I'm like, wow, people really can do anything, I guess. But I've never met a tattoo connoisseur. I will call you that. A tattoo.
I'm a little snob.
A snob. Yes. I love it. I love it. No, that's so cool. I think it's a big part of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
So, how do you find humor in your marriage? I'm gonna jump right into it. Well, because we've been talking and laughing like the entire time, and I really want to know. Well, I mean, we were laughing about butt tattoos. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. I've thought about butt tattoos before.
You have
on other people. I'm just kidding. I'm joking. On myself. No. Yes, I would just. I like talking to humorous couples because I can relate to them really well. Mm-hmm. And I really want to know. I know we have a different kind of humor in our marriage, and I would like to know kind of like their self-aware idea of their humor, mm-hmm, and maybe talk on that a little bit.
Yeah.
So, actually we the first time that we ever really talked about that was when we got the little question to prepare for this.
Oh, nice.
And we realized that like
little inside baseball
humor and comedy is actually kind of a huge part of our relationship.
Yeah.
One of our favorite things to do together is watch stand-up comedians.
Nice.
So part of our humor is as sad as it is like quoting our favorite comedians to each other.
Nice.
Do you have favorites?
Oh yeah. Kyle Kinane. We love Kyle Kinane.
Okay.
John Mulaney.
Mm-hmm. Nate Bargatze.
Nate Bargatze is very funny.
So Nate Bargatze and Kyle Kinane have relatively new half-hour specials on Netflix.
Does Kyle Kinane have a new one?
Yeah.
How did you not tell me this?
I saw it. I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah. You watch it. Watch out on that.
Watch it together.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a rule of marriage.
It is.
But like, those guys, like Nate Bargatze's good because like he's kind of one of those guys like Jim Gaffigan who's like clean all the time. Gaffigan. He's clean. That was actually one of the first dates we went on as a married couple when we moved here.
Mm-hmm.
Syracuse, we saw Jim Gaffigan play at the State Fair.
Yep.
Oh, that's awesome.
We saw, and I want to throw this in here as a flex, Donald Glover do stand up at ASU before he decided he was going to stop doing stand up, and it was hilarious.
So he actually, if I'm not mistaken, he was workshopping or like testing out material for his Weirdo special.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you've ever watched Weirdo, he had not seen Weirdo yet. And so what happened, a former teen of mine who worked at ASU, she went to ASU, Arizona State University, which is the worst university in the entire world. Fair down. So she was working there and she's like, hey, we got free tickets to the show. He's doing like a student show. Do you want to come? And we're like, yeah, sure. So we drove to Phoenix. And he did his entire Weirdo special before he ever filmed Weirdo. And I was like, this guy's hilarious. And then we saw him like a year later do his Childish Gambino hip hop stuff. Like it was it was weird because like I remember being like, this is really good, but I thought he would be funny.
Yeah. It's hard because like we like that. We do. And Camp was a good album. But I was like at that point in pregnancy when I was like, I just want to go to bed and it's really loud and all of the people are pushing it. So I didn't enjoy it as much as, but I'm also just an old mom now. So
yeah, stand-up comedy. Like it's us quoting stand-up comedy bits to one another. Us recalling our favorite Jim and Dwight pranks from The Office.
Nice.
Yes. Really fun with us a lot.
And then like the other thing that I found is, every once in a while, so like Kate is a very funny person, but she's a very, like, she won't riff. Like I'm a riffer. Like, I come up with, like, riffs, like, go, go, and go. But she'll say something weird.
Just go on and on and on. And I will just be dying and just cackling and cackling until, like, I can't breathe anymore. So,
She will do something weird and innocuous that nobody in the world would think is funny. Not because it's not funny, but it was, like, there's this story. We just got married, and, like, we weren't arguing, but something was going on, and she had to go get a shower. And she's like, well, I guess I'm going to go take a shower. Like an idiot, and then she just walked away. it was like a walk-off home run. No, like, okay. I just went, and then I fell out laughing because it was the funniest thing I'd ever heard in my life. Because who says I'm going to take a shower like an idiot? The context doesn't matter because it's context or not, it's the funniest thing that anyone's ever said.
How do you shower like an idiot?
But what context would allow you to say that showering
like an idiot? Okay, so Maggie, my beautiful, wonderful daughter, that only one of us is going to survive her middle school years. Actually, at this point, possibly her elementary school years. She was 2 weeks overdue. And I had a C-section with Gus, and I really wanted to be back with Maggie. And so we were doing everything within our power to, like, make labor happen. And I had read that if you take a bath, it, like, increases oxytocin and da-da-da-da-da. But there was something wrong with the tub, and there was something wrong with the plumbing. And so I couldn't take a bath, and I was, like, really mad. And I was like, I'm just going to screw it up, and I'm not going to be able to be back. And I'm going to have a C-section, so I guess I'll just go take a shower like an idiot.
And then
that's amazing.
I love it.
And then she just walked away, leaving me with that. And for 7 minutes, I was just falling out laughing.
So when my anxiety ramps up, and I, like, have that, like, everything's going to go wrong thing, Adam just thinks that's hilarious.
That's so funny. That's so good.
Well, it's interesting that Adam was talking about, like, riffing, or, like, doing bits, because I feel like you and I end up doing bits together unintentionally.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, like,
and
I can't
think of one.
And in front
of people, and then people get really awkward and, like, feel really
uncomfortable. Or laugh with us. Yeah, like, there's been a few people that walk into that situation and actually, yes and us.
Oh, yeah. Or I think of your mom, how she always walks in on, like, on our stupid, like, riffs or whatever to one another. And she's like, y'all are meant for each other. And, like, we'll walk out. She just, like, always will look at it and be like, that's why you're married. Okay.
Well, I also noticed that a lot of our bits end up, like, being kind of morbid, or, like, people dying.
Yeah. Or it's always, okay, so I don't really talk about my dad, and this might be, like, a total tangent, but I don't talk about my dad too much on, like, social media or stuff, it's always really funny when I say, like, and I tell stories about my dad, like, well, my dad, you know, like, and you'll always be like, you have a dad. Like, I hate you. I do. So, hi, Maggie's here.
Maggie's up. Hey, Maggie.
Did y'all during the podcast wake her up?
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, probably not. She wakes up, what time is it? Right about the time that I want to go to sleep.
Oh,
Maggie wakes
nice.
Up. Gotcha. That's just what happens.
Gotcha.
Oh, darling. It's okay. It's okay. It's a hack. She...
I know
she sounds so cute.
You okay, Maggie?
How old is she?
3. She'll be 4 in March.
Okay. So a year ahead of us.
So, they had her at the wedding.
Yeah,
right?
She was little bitty,
she
though.
Was
she was a
bitty.
Baby.
Yeah, and we just found out we were pregnant with Lily.
I think I remember you telling us that at the table.
Yeah.
We're pregnant. And I remember being like, oh, I've just met you, but I'm so happy for you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, I feel like our friendship with the Agelbaggers, kind of happened at circumstance, like it just happened,
just like, and it progressed so fast, which is
like it was like proximity.
I think
like, hey, you're cool,
I think it shows like us and them both being just social people.
I mean, more so like, us, but yeah.
Stop it. Yeah. Well, and between the two of us, Adam's definitely the more social person. Like, I'm more of a very good. I'm more introverted, I think, but he definitely maintains our friendships for us. Can you hear her crying? Is it going to be a problem?
We can hear her. If you want to, we can take a little break. Gina also has a cough attack, so we can pause the recording.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, pause it. No, we can do it. We can
chill her out.
So let's take a quick break on Holy Matching.
Just perfect. Like, you guys, I feel so bad.
And we're back with the Eigelburgers and the Glazes. Food for thought. Because it sounds like hamburger. Like, Eigel hamburger.
And the Glazes. Donuts.
It was a stretch, but I thought I'd try it.
Okay. Well,
anyway. And it failed.
It was not good, but it's okay. I support you. Okay, so we talked a little bit about humor.
Yeah.
Which is also funny that the kids are here, too.
Very true, like, yes.
It's just, that's a part of marriage, right? I'm sure Lily will start yelling in a little bit, too.
Okay, and so I think I have a good thing to lead us into this. So there's a part at the end of the, like, bio that we got sent for them, where he talks about, oh, Kate also veils at Mass, and Adam is covered in the sweetest tattoos you've ever seen.
That was their bio.
And they also sent us an awesome photo that is going to be the cover art of them at Mass with her veiling and him having his tattoos out for the world to see. And I would love to hear, like, their, how their marriage points them towards holiness.
Mm.
I don't know if you want to get into that.
Yeah. So one of the things that's, it's really kind of crazy about Kate and I is we back each other up in the ways that, like, we lack. So when we first met, I was very much in this, in this mode where, like, I was super into, like, speaking and preaching and ministering to people, but, like, I sucked at being aware of the needs of others and serving other people. Like, social justice and things like that were not on my radar. And, like, that was something that Kate was all about. And so, like, when we got married, not just getting married, but in our relationship, she has helped me become more aware of that and, like, the need for that. And it's one of those things that it didn't detract from the things that I already cared about. It just built on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then conversely, like, I remember her sharing stories with me about how, like, she, like, there were things about being a Catholic that she really resented, like certain, like, ways of praying, like the rosary and stuff like that.
And now
she's the one who, like, I can't pray the rosary. I suck at it. I fall asleep every time. It is literally like if I need to fall asleep, I could shotgun a bunch of melatonin into my face, or I could pray a rosary. And by the second decade of the rosary, I'm just zonked.
Oh, you should make a rosary out of melatonin tablets.
No.
It's not on it.
Just so you know, they melt with humidity. They get weird and sticky.
Sorry, I interrupted you. I'm sorry. Keep going.
But that's one of the things. So, like, she's really good at, and now, like, it's almost not like we've, like, flip-flopped roles, but, like, when we first got together, like, I was super into reading scripture and all that kind of stuff. And, like, and now I still try to, but it's not – but she, every day, you know, she makes that time for prayer and reading scripture and stuff like that. And like, I don't do that as much as I used to. So it's kind of funny how we wound up complimenting each other so much in that regard.
Yeah, it definitely – it was funny that – because I was raised in that kind of, I went to Catholic school K through college, and a lot of it is, when people aren't giving you opportunities to create a relationship with Jesus, and instead they're just kind of telling you the things that you have to do, it's hard to take it as anything other than a bunch of celibate old white men telling you what to do. And so I kind of found my faith in JVC, like, in the ministering to the people, in the work that I was doing with the kids that I was serving. Like, that's where I found my faith. They talk about, like, having your heart broken where God's heart is broken, and then allowing God to use you to work to heal the world. And I did feel that a lot. Now it's hard for me to feel connected to that, because as a mom and in the job that I'm doing, it's hard to feel like I'm really, like, doing God's work in the world. And I have to, like, take a step back and recognize that, like, I'm raising children to not be assholes, and that's, like, probably the most. No, really, truly, like,
you as a youth minister, amen for you.
Yeah,
legitimately.
I know. And again, like, as a teacher, like, that, you know, it was a really great opportunity to see all the things I didn't want to do. Like, sometimes I wanted to pull parents aside and be like, "Can you tell me everything that you did so that I can not do it?" But really, we do want to raise our kids to be saints.
Mm-hmm.
But Adam, for me, points me towards holiness because I struggle with anxiety and depression, and so part of that is a spiritual battle that, like, I don't always feel loved by God, and I don't, sometimes I'm just not sure whether God exists. I continue to pray and I continue to push through it because I know that, like, my feelings don't dictate reality.
Right.
Within faith and within other things.
Right.
My therapist would be very proud of me. But Adam is such a perfect match for me in the, like, in our personalities and in our strengths and our weaknesses. And he puts up with all my nonsense and somehow he still likes me, even though I'm very annoying. He is how I know that God loves me, because only a God who loved me would create a husband for me like Adam. And so when I can't feel like, you know, when I'm kind of in this spiritual darkness, I just remember, like, Adam is my sign. That's how I know that God loves me.
So stinking good. Okay. Like, sometimes I love these conversations because I'm like, they really are just kind of providential anyway. Because we literally had this conversation last night. I was like, why are you still married to me? Like, and it's like, because God is good. Like, God gave me that, like, gave us this marriage.
And what, like, was it that you ended the night with? You're like, it's hard being me. I was like, try being married to you.
He's laughing at that too much.
Well, because, I mean, she said it like as a joke.
It was like the end joke of, like, me emotionally crying. I'm like, it's just tough being me, you know.
I don't think were you expecting me to say that? No. I was like, try being married to you. She was like, like, smacked me, like, stop.
So good.
But that's super true, because in all reality, like, on paper, we shouldn't have been together. At all. We're so totally different people. And when we came together, we were at these totally different, like, crossroads in our lives. Like, we both. So, I mean, I feel like you get the story a lot, but I'm going to go ahead and just throw it out there. Not you specifically, but you hear it a lot. We were both actively discerning totally different vocations. I had been accepted to seminary and was supposed, like, it was like, I liken it a lot of the times when I talk about it to, like, I had, like, gone to, like, the military recruitment station, and I got approved, and I was like, I had my ship out date.
Yeah.
And she was actively discerning religious life. I mean, like, we still did, even all through our engagement and stuff, but
the only reason that we're married is because of my college loans.
Yeah, you couldn't pay them off, so you couldn't get into the convent.
Yeah, you can't become a exactly, nun with that much debt. So I was like, well, I'm not really, like, it was in the back of my mind. It was something that I was interested in. And to be perfectly honest, especially now as a wife and a mom, there are times when thinking about, like, being in a cloistered convent and taking a vow of silence sounds like heaven.
Aw, bang. But,
the most romantic thing you could tell your spouse.
But I put it off because I was like, well, it's going to be a bit before I can do that because I've got college ones. But that's one of the things that, like, something I'm learning to do is to see the things that, like, I hate and the things that really irritate me are actually ways that God is helping me grow in holiness. Like that Padre Pio quote, like, don't say that person irritates me, say that person sanctifies me. Like,
yeah.
Like, even so my college debt. Oh yeah, it's very hard.
Yeah.
But even my college debt was leading me towards my vocation.
Hmm.
If that makes sense.
Right.
Because if I didn't have any college debt, I would be in a convent. So thank God for my college debt.
Yeah, you see it now. It's like,
so what's your story, Anna? Why do you still have? Huh?
What happened? I just had a lot of college debt. I just got a ton of it. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I still love you.
Thanks.
Wallet win.
Financial,
in the show notes.
Financial freedom.
Get that free.
No, it's fine.
What happened?
Oh, man, I'm knocked over.
Oh man. Oh, no.
All good. Everything's fine.
Wait, so Kate had to walk away for a sec. So, Adam, while you're here, Kate told us she was the oldest of eight, grew up in a predominantly Catholic home, Catholic school upbringing. What was your background context?
Boom. All right, let's get into this.
Do it.
So Katie, like Kate mentioned, she's the oldest of eight siblings, five girls, three boys. Predominantly Catholic family, you know, like a nice Northeastern family.
No, I didn't fart.
I don't know if you fart. That's amazing.
You're gonna have to edit this part out.
Oh no, we're leaving it. It's amazing.
I scratched my husband with my toenail.
Like, and it came out of nowhere and it really hurt.
Sorry. Through my sock.
I know you.
Sorry. Through my sock.
You freaking horse with that hoof. Golly.
Stop.
Okay. Yeah. So I'll try and give you like the 30,000 foot overview. So I was adopted. And I grew up, I mean, so my brother and I, who I grew up with my whole life, are both adopted. My parents were unable to have kids, so we were both adopted through Catholic Social Services of Southern Arizona. My parents, my biological parents, were in high school in a little town, a little romantic town called Roswell, New Mexico, which, if you're familiar with anything, is where the aliens landed.
Makes sense.
So, so they grew
your
up,
whole
they
life
grew
makes
up...
sense to me now, Adam.
So yeah, they grew up in like this backwater town in New Mexico, and they got pregnant when they were teenagers. And my mom, after some convincing, decided that she was going to have the baby but not keep me. And so she moved to Tucson to live with a group of sisters who took care of unwed mothers. She lived in an unwed mother's home. And so that's where I was. And my parents, who are my parents, my adopted parents, were there. And I was born and raised in Tucson. But I met my mom, my biological mom, when I was 17. I met my dad, my biological father, when I was 20. My mom actually moved from New Mexico. My dad, what her dad, I know this so much.
No.
Her,
this is so great.
Her dad was a guy, he banks, like small regional banks would hire him to come in. They'd make him president of their board, and he'd fix their finances and make them like, and help them make money. Because a lot of times small regional banks operated a deficit, and he helped them operate in the black. And so the last place they ever moved was a town called Casa Grande, Arizona, which is halfway between Tucson and Phoenix, which is 45 minutes away from where I lived my entire life. That's where she moved, and she lived there her whole life. And that's where I met her when I was 17. My father, my biological father, who I met when I was 20, he actually married the next girl that he was with. And so I have they've been married for 35 years. They just had their 35th anniversary. I'm 35 and a half. So they got married very like wild. Like, so he actually.
Yeah.
Hold you have on. Three moms?
I two-ish, two and a half. So they got married, and then they have two kids. My sister, who's 35, and my brother, who's 33, who are my half-siblings. We share a dad. And they actually have been in – they were in my dad and his wife, my stepmom-ish, Jamie, they have been in ministry for years. And they actually are not Catholic. They serve in like kind of the non-denominational Assemblies of God movement. And they actually, when I was 18 or 19 years old, they moved from Texas to Tucson and planted a church, and they were pastoring a church. And my half brother and my brother, who I grew up with my entire life, we're going to high school together for 2 years, and they had no idea.
That's
amazing.
Yeah, so like they passed each other in the hallways. They saw each other all the time, and they had no idea that I was a common link between the two of them.
That's insane.
So I got my brother, who I grew up with my whole life. He's 31. My sister, who's 35. My brother, who's 33. And then my biological mom, I was born, I think she was like 17. She had her next and only other child when she was 40. So I have a 12-year-old brother.
What?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
13.
Yeah, how dare you get the age wrong?
And like Adam's story is so awesome because one of the things that he sometimes glosses over with like all of those details, which are crazy, is that when he met his biological mom and his biological grandmother and his biological grandfather and his biological aunt and his biological uncle, they became a part of his family. And his mom, who raised him, Lois, like, what a level of like grace that she just accepted these. Like, I'm telling you, when we had Thanksgiving, it was all of them. Like, Adam's biological,
praise God,
was like just seamlessly merged into Adam's family, and they're just a part. And so like I really do have two mothers-in-law.
Wow.
And Gus and Maggie have three grandmothers, and they do like Scott, Adam's biological father, is also a part of our life, not as much involved in that family, but like we'll also see them a lot. And so Gus and Maggie have one, two, three grandfathers. And
four.
Well, three grandmothers. They don't call Jamie grandma, but they know that she's married to Grandpa Scott. Mm. But like, so Maggie has a lot of dresses because everybody loves to buy cute dresses for Maggie. They love to send books to Gus, which is great. But it really is such a story of grace. Like, it's one of those stories that like you wish that everybody struggling with an unplanned pregnancy could hear.
Yeah.
Because you don't realize, like, yes, right now it sucks. And yes, right now it's really hard. But 17, 18, 20 years down the line, your family could expand exponentially. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it won't, but like, just allow God to work. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like,
absolutely. Let him,
like, and that there were times when Adam first met his biological father that, like, it wasn't like the Hallmark movie moment that you want in a reunion like that.
And it wasn't a fairy tale. Yeah,
it wasn't, right. No, it wasn't a fairy tale. You know, but now we have a really good relationship with him and with my sister-in-law and my brother-in-law and their spouses and their kids.
Yeah. Wow. It was a little weird. I mean, like, it was a little weirder. I mean, like, not like this matters. But when I met my mom when I was 17, like, we just kind of clicked, and that wasn't a good thing or bad thing. It's just what it was. But when I met my dad when I was 20, like, it was one of those things, like, I faulted him for a lot of stuff. Hmm. Like, there was a unresolved mess that was just rattling around in my psyche that I blamed him for. And it was unfair, you know what I mean? Because, I mean, he was a 16, 17-year-old kid with a kid on the way, and he was and my dad will tell his own story to anybody who will hear it, but he was not a good guy when he was at that. It's not a judgment, it's by his own admission. He was doing a lot of really shady things. My 17-year-old
brain isn't fully developed.
But when I met him when I was 20 years old, him and I struggled for the better part of a decade to figure out how to have a relationship, because how do you start being a dad to a 20-year-old man? You know, like, he's looking at me, he's like, I've got kids who are this guy's age. And now, like, all of a sudden, this guy's in my life, and...
Well, and somebody who already has a father.
Yeah.
Like, Adam's relationship with his parents is also good. If that, like, and so it's, it was, but it is a real story of grace, and how, like, you can, like, so much more can come of something that sucks at the beginning.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear, like, our other fun family fact? This is really cool.
Tell us.
So, we love telling this story, I mean, because it's weird. So I think, was it our second date, or was it our first? It was our first, remember. Or our second date, but it was one of our very early on dates. We were talking about our families, and she told me about how many siblings she had and all that stuff. And I go, like, oh, cool. And I'm learning about her parents. I'm like, what are your parents' names? And she's like, John and Lois. I'm like, shut up, because my parents' names are John and Lois. So people who came from 2,500 miles apart have parents who have the exact same names.
Wait, so your kids know them as Grandpa John and Grandpa John and Grandma Lois and Grandma Lois, or what? Like,
and Papa. And Grandma and Pop.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But yeah. funny. What worked out really well for us, like, not like this was planned. It definitely wasn't planned. But our son Gus is Augustine John, and our daughter Maggie is Magdalena Lois. Done and done. Everyone's happy.
Yeah, that's so easy.
Wow, knock them out in two kids. Dang, that's a smart idea.
Dang it, Daniel. that is awesome. I'm really happy. I know that we didn't think we were going to get to talk about it, but I really did want to talk about, I knew a little bit about Adam's adoption story.
Yeah.
But I love, the details of it all. And you're right. Like, the graces that are there when you allow God to work, and praise God that your mom did.
You get
choose.
Three grandmas. That's like five Christmases.
That's five Christmases.
It really is. We have to, like, set some firm boundaries.
Yeah.
On gift giving.
I bet.
We live in a very small apartment.
Yeah. But, like, the beauty of your mom choosing to have you, even though it might have not been the best circumstances, but still allowing herself to make that decision, that small fiat, like, in a way, it was like that small yes.
Yeah.
Like, yes, I will have this child. I can't raise them, but
hopefully
one day we can reunite. And that's really awesome that, like, you guys instantly clicked. I love that about the maternal bond. It's like, that's my mom. It's so good. You need to write a book.
Or are you?
No.
She can write it. She's the English major.
Hashtag NaNoWriMo.
That is so great. So, okay. So going off of hardships and, you know,
well, okay, I was going to say, like, I was honestly, I know that we know a lot of his story, or at least part of his story, that normally ends up, like, as a hardship.
Right, but it's not. Right. Like, so let's talk about real hardships. So since you didn't give us much on that one.
Yeah, thanks for having a good life, Adam. Golly.
Well, I mean, like, it wasn't without its... I mean, like, there's a lot of stuff that we went through. But I mean, like, it's worked out great now. And for a couple of years now, like, him and I and my whole family, it's kind of... We're not all totally integrated, like, seamlessly. You know, even my dad, the guy who raised me, my adoptive father, and Scott, my biological father's wife, worked together.
In the same school district. In the
same
school district. In the admin building.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tucson is a tiny town. It's actually a decent-sized city. It's much bigger than the city that we live in now. But actually, it's a tiny town. Like, everybody knows everybody. Yeah. Everybody is related.
Yeah. And so, like even when my biological father and I weren't getting along that great, they worked together.
Yeah.
Like, they worked 20 feet away from one another.
That's so funny.
Each other every day. And they actually developed kind of like a friendship almost. But that was kind of cool.
Like a weird, this is awkward.
But,
And the moral of the story is they're all the same people.
They're all the same.
Dun, dun, dun. All right, so we got about 10 more minutes left before we need to wrap up this podcast. But I don't want to not have a chance to talk about
this next part.
What they told us about their hardships.
Yeah.
As a youth minister, I know Adam is still one as well. I think we, and I believe Kate and my wife as well, have a completely different insight on church bureaucracy that not a lot of people get to see.
Mm.
I kind of wanted to pass it over to them, the Eichelbergers, and kind of give them a chance to talk about, the hardship that they want to talk about.
A big hardship,
So, one of the it's not the easiest thing in the world for us to talk about, but in our marriage, in the time that we've been together, 7 years married, we've actually had 5 job losses
between the two of us.
Gosh. So there's been 5 different times where we basically had to hit reboot and start over. I worked for Apple for a while. I started out working in retail and I did some corporate training and stuff, and I left to work for this company, Intuit.
QuickBooks.
Yeah. A buddy of mine went from Apple to there. He's like, you got to come over. It's great money. It's a great work environment. And I did, and I loved it. And I was there maybe 5-6 months, and they did a massive round of layoffs.
Oh man!
Just for cost cutting measures and stuff. And so they're like, we're sorry. You're just one of those people who's on the totem pole. Like, you have been here long enough. Sorry. But they gave me a great severance. And so the cool part about that was I got to hang out with Gus and be like a stay-at-home dad for a while. And I learned how to cook and things like that. So that was kind of cool. And then I got another job working for a pharmaceutical company doing tech support. And I got let go of that job. And it wasn't a cost-cutting thing. It was just like, you know what, you did some good stuff, but you're not really meeting expectations here. And so it's time to move on. And I was like, wow, this kind of sucks. That's 2 times.
Yeah.
And then the third time I lost a job, and this is the one that really hurts, I've been doing youth ministry for 15 years, and I actually got let go from a youth ministry job. And that's the one that we actually moved here for.
Oh, gosh.
So we moved across the country from Arizona to here for me to take a job being a youth minister. And, you know, it was a great scenario, you know. Kate's got a huge family, and we wanted our kids to be around a huge family and with lots of aunts and uncles and cousins and stuff. And we got here, and the church is a great parish, and the people were good to us. And the pastor who hired me gave me a lot of incentives to make it work. And about a year into it, we just sat down, and he said, look, man, it's not working out. It's not working out the way that I thought this was going to work out. And we're going to go our separate ways.
So this is the most recent one. This is the one that, okay. Oh,
the most recent.
Well, that's the most recent one.
Oh, for you. Yeah. Well, because I knew you had moved. We knew that story. We followed that online of like they moved to Syracuse. For a youth ministry position.
We stopped at the Leininger wedding on the way.
Yeah.
We planned our trip.
They were packed up and going. Yeah.
They were packed up and going. That's right. Yeah.
And so, like, to me, like, and I want you to be able to share yours first, but I because I've never actually really openly talked about the fact that I basically got fired for being a youth minister. And, you know, like, in 15 years of doing this, like, that, I thought I was doing well and stuff like that, but it's, I don't have anything bad to say about the guy. You know, he's a good priest and he cares about people and he's a good boss to the people that he is a boss for now, but I was not a good fit for him.
Hmm.
And It's not like I didn't do my due diligence or didn't pray over it. It didn't work. And I'll never disparage the guy. I think initially I was like, screw this guy. I'm really upset about it, but he's actually a really good man. And he's pastored really well and stuff. And I would never say anything bad about him. And it was, stop it.
The Patreon people have to get something.
But Patreon?
Whatever. Say it out loud. It just exists on the internet.
But it was hard. I mean, like, it was really hard. It was a real blow to my ego, and it was a real blow to my confidence. Like, yo, I thought I really was good at this because I'd done it for 11 years before that point. And then all of a sudden somebody, like, I went from 11 years of everybody being like, you are great at this, thank you so much, and getting these glowing feedback and compliments and stuff, to after a year, I got fired. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and I think that that's something that a lot of times people who work in the church don't talk about, is that there's a business aspect to it, and there's a possibility that there's going to be church closings or layoffs or people being fired and stuff like that. Because, like, to us, like, that's a totally new phenomenon. In Arizona, where we used to live, they couldn't open churches fast enough.
Yeah.
And now here, and there's churches closing pretty regularly.
Yeah.
And, like, the idea that people can lose their jobs working in the church is scary. You know, and it was one of those things that I thought that, you know, like, as long as I'm performing well enough, I'm going to be okay. And apparently I didn't. And it was a real weird moment. But, like, I kind of, you know, Stella got her groove back. I love that. Now I'm doing ministry again. And
we were very lucky. We moved to a neighborhood with a little neighborhood parish. It was really good. Like, it's there's something about small parishes, not to disparage big parishes, because there's things that everything can do, like, everything can have a good aspect and a bad aspect. That, like, the sense of community is huge to us. That's huge. But in light of Daniel mentioning, like, the bureaucracy of parishes, like, we put so much on our priests. We put so much on our priests. We need them to be, well, first, I don't know what it's like in Houston, but up here in upstate New York, we have easily three times as many church buildings as we have priests, easily. And so, like, we know one priest who has four parishes merged. Fortunately, he only has three of them that he actually does masses at, but he has three parishes to do masses at. So you need
on a Sunday. Oh my gosh. Or
for a weekend. So, like, we need them to give us the sacraments. We need them to be holy. We need them to be praying. We need them to be good homilists. And especially in this day and age with so much going on, like, we desperately want them to, like, speak the truth and talk about important things from the pulpit. We need them to teach us.
Right.
And they also have to be good at running things and management. And part of the problem is, and I would never want to disparage priests, like, they're working their butts off. They're trying so hard, like, so many good, good men. There's a lot of responsibilities that they have that maybe they're not super well trained for.
Yo, take a management course.
Like, the ability to lead, the ability to, like, sit somebody down and give them constructive criticism. Like, I don't know that they teach that in seminary. I don't know that seminary is the place for that. But, like, you can't, like, no one person can do anything. I mean, that's why we have communities. That's why we have marriage. There are things that Adam's good at, and there's things that I'm good at, and the things that I'm not good at, we let him do. And that's why, like, back in the day, or in places like Arizona, where, like, you can have three or four priests in a parish, that stuff gets handled. You've got the priest who's good at, and you're like, it's Father John, he's gonna do good, it's gonna be like 10 minutes long, it's gonna make some good points, and we're out of here. And then you've got the priest who's like, look, this is what we need to get done, and we're gonna get done. But out here, you got one. And there's just a lot of things that are really hard for them to do, and it is super frustrating, because when you just go to mass, and there are lots of people who just go to mass, and that's good. Like, you can live a good Catholic life and not be super involved in your parish. Like the Saint John Paul the Great talked about the domestic church. Like, if you are going to mass regularly and you receive the sacraments and your faith life is focused in your family, that's totally fine. But when you're super involved in your parish, it can sometimes be really hard to stay plugged into your faith when people are human and the church is human. I mean, especially right now, like,
when you see the discrepancies, you see the failures, you see the raw ugliness of it all, and you're like, ugh.
Like, we live in upstate New York. Buffalo's only 2 hours away. Love-ish in Buffalo. I will share and nothing happened to me. I'm fine. Yay. Nothing happened to me. I'm fine. But we looked at the records for my diocese, and there were two priests with accusations, credible accusations against them, who were still in ministry at my parish when I was a child. Both of them heard my confession in a confessional with no witnesses around. Now, by the grace of God, I am fine. Nothing happened.
Right.
To me. But, like, it's difficult for... I'm not trying to turn this into a trash the church thing. Maintaining our faith in the face of these kinds of hardships is incredibly difficult.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry.
No, this is so good. Yeah.
I trashed my school on Facebook and they fired me. I'm fine with it.
That's how she lost her job. You were talking over what she was saying.
Oh, okay. Wait, say it again. Say it again. I was talking over. Sorry. One more time. Hash it out again.
I was teaching and there was new administration and I really, really didn't like the way that they were running things. And like every morning I would say to Adam, like, can't I just quit today? Like, please, can't I just quit today? And every day he would say, we can't afford it if you quit. And so I got a little wild. And
You were wilding.
I was wilding. my principal was sending, he was sending emails to people. He would hit reply all, and he would, like, bitch somebody out in the email to reply all.
Oh no. Gosh.
And it was like, the dude was just a jerk. And he, like, raised his kids atheist, like, because my family knows him going way back. Like, he was the principal of, like, different public schools, and he retired in disgrace, and they put him in a Catholic school because discount. Mm-hmm. And because when you retire from the public schools, you can only make so much money. And without threatening your retirement. So they're like, yeah, we can get this principal cheap. So anyway, so he put on this Catholic face to come work for us. And I just didn't like him from the beginning. And he was doing this thing where he would, like, trash talk people in emails to everyone. And so one day he did it to me.
Oh, uh-oh.
Wow. Oh. What happened was...
Well, it's funny because I remember, like, vicariously living through this via Twitter. But that's another
story. Oh, yeah. Like, live tweeting it?
Be like, sorry, I can't come in today. Your management style has caused me to lose my will to live. I can't come in today. I hate you and everything you stand for. That every morning. Like,
there was also a lot to that too. Like, there was, like, poor leadership and poor execution on the management end, but also things like Kate was a theology teacher. She taught religion at a Catholic school, and she was constantly getting reprimanded for teaching. Church teaching on
truth, things. Yeah.
You can't tell them that soldiers are sinning when they kill people.
Yeah.
Well, even things like she's teaching about sin and reconciliation and stuff like that, and somebody or somehow the topic of parental advisory about masturbation and pornography came up, right? Mm-hmm. And Kate taught what the church teaches about what the purpose of sex is and that viewing pornography and masturbation are sins, and then she got an angry letter from a parent, which resulted in an angry email from her boss about, like, you can't say that to kids. Like, you can't tell them that that's bad and stuff like that. And so, like, there's things that she was doing that she was supposed to be doing as a Catholic educator, and then people were coming down on her about it. So that compiled with all of the other baloney was just...
But the thing is, like, that didn't bother me so much. You expect that. These people are, like, not... Well, like, people send their kids to Catholic school for all different reasons. And I tried really hard to, like... Not that I think that soldiers are sitting when they kill people, but, like, it got, they
you
were like,
speak up. No one's gonna be able to hear
all. This. Anyway, I just remember that being that he was like, did you say that killing people is bad? I was like, yes.
Yes.
Did you say when a kid said, even when soldiers kill people? I said, yes.
I said, yes.
Yeah. And then we talked about culpability and how culpability is mitigated depending on the circumstances, but it's still bad. And so the problem isn't with the parental blowback, because you get that in all aspects of ministry. Mm-hmm. People, I got it when I was teaching. Like, if a kid received a grade based on their work that was worse than what the parent felt that it was because the parent did the work, then you would get blowback. What I wasn't used to was an administrator who wanted the theology to bend to fit the parent's discomfort.
Mm. Yeah.
That was something that, like, that coupled with, like, correction via reply all email was just like, I made a joke about Padre Pio in my last email, which I thought was pretty proud of. He was like, Kate, I noticed you didn't do such and such. And I was like, yeah, I wasn't here yesterday. I had a day off so I could take my kids to the doctor. And being that I'm not as holy as Padre Pio, I can't bilocate. And I made him maddest was that he didn't know who Padre Pio
was. He had to spend 5 minutes.
Oh my gosh. Just Googling.
He definitely didn't, because he definitely doesn't like do anything Catholic, but
I picture him in his office being like, hey Siri, what's biolocation?
Well, so to I guess kind of wrap up this whole part.
Oh, I have more questions.
Remember that time I got fired and I trash talked everybody?
Well, no, so okay, so how did it end? Did you just get, before we wrap it up, I do want to see the conclusion of
The
your
heart
experience. Yeah, like how did it end?
This is how you know that God is so much bigger than us. I was fired without legal cause, so I got unemployment.
Oh, nice.
Couldn't quit was because if you quit, then we don't have any money, and then we can't pay the bills and blah blah blah. I mean, we Adam was still working. Adam was working. He did have a job at that time.
And then I got to start stripping again.
He did have a job, but my income was necessary. We were a two working family, but when I got unemployment because I was fired without legal cause because I had no record of anything, we got unemployment. It was like, oh my God, God knows what he's doing. Like even the things suck.
Yeah.
He knows what he's doing. And so I was home for a little bit with the kids, and then I got my state job with those good bennies. Someday we will be able to retire. Sorry, all you other millennials.
She'll be able to retire.
Yeah, working for the church. What is that?
Yeah, I know. And it was unbelievable. I kid you not. I went to work on my first day of my new job. And Adam came home, and he had gotten laid off.
What?
Oh my goodness!
Like, not from he got the gig working for the parish that was part time, but he had a job.
It's like a filler job. I was working at a medical office doing some.
Because like that's what you got to do when you got a family, man. Sometimes you got to take jobs.
And they were like, "Hey, sorry, we don't need you anymore. We have two of you guys doing something that we only need one of you to do."
We found that we can contract this out to someone else for less money.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. And the cool thing was, is I went home. And we're like, what are we going to do now? And then 2 weeks later, another church contacted me and was like, hey, would you want to do evangelization for us? So I actually work part-time, 20 hours a week at one church and 20 hours a week at another church.
Nice.
Oh, cool.
I'm making full-time salary.
So, like, the lesson that we learned from that is, like, God's timing, man. Like, we're never going to have as much money as some of the members of my family who just have better jobs than us. Yeah. And it is so hard to just trust when things are up in the air. It is so hard. Trust. And like when you just gotta like grin and like hold it together by the skin of your teeth, but we know that like we wouldn't want Adam doing anything else. Like Adam, this is Adam's work, this is what he was made for. And I mean, we're very, very fortunate right now that like I do have a job. Like I'm telling you right now, I have this one coworker. She's like, do you ever think about going back to teaching? It seems so easy. Okay. I'll bleep that one out. But I'm very fortunate that now I'm making more money than I was teaching, because literally anything makes more money than teaching.
Yeah.
And it's all about God's timing. Like it's just trusting. It's just knowing like, and that's something that like, it's so hard to remember day to day. But if the struggles that we've been through, the hardships that we've been through taught us anything, it's that like, you just gotta trust. And you just keep looking to the Annunciation, like Mary people paint her both literally and figuratively as this like meek, pale, like passive woman. But you have to remember that in the time and place where she said, yes, I will have this baby, she was looking at the very real possibility of being stoned to death.
Yeah.
Like, that's what they did to adulteresses. If Joseph had been like, nope, not my baby, she would have been stoned to death. And so her trust, like I just have to keep imitating that. Like that's like just asking for the grace to trust God, because it's hard. But like that's what so put a cherry on top of that. That's what our have taught us, is that like you just hold on. We've always made it. We've like things have gotten tight.
It always makes it in by the buzzer, like right on time.
Always does. You just gotta like hold your breath and be like, Jesus, I trust you.
Yeah. I don't know what next week is going to look like. And then before next week even happens, it like.
So, like, rosary back around your hands so that your, like, fingers are white. You're like, Jesus, I trust in you.
White knuckled.
Anytime.
Anytime. So real. So real. I can relate to so much on that.
Yeah, no, for sure.
For sure. Like, yeah, working in ministry. And it's never about the money. It's never about the money. But then a lot of times it's like, it is about the money. Because yes, I know, sure. I want to make sure that we can live and survive. And yes. It's that hard battle of like not being guilty, not feeling guilty, but still feeling guilty.
Like, yeah. And needing to like the balance, man, like your primary vocation is your marriage and your kids are more important. Yeah. And sometimes some of those ministry jobs, it's not for somebody who's married and with kids.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Okay.
Thank y'all.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I was going to say yes. Thank you guys so much for coming on the podcast today.
I'm sorry we went so
Didn't even
long.
Get to talk about bailing.
Oh, I'm dang
sorry.
It.
We'll have you on again. Sorry, that's fine. We can, yeah, exactly. Oh no, we're fine
teasing
on time.
Don't have to ask me about it. I just thought.
Or can we do it for a Patreon?
Yes, we can. Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. Yes, we'll do it on a Patreon podcast.
Yes.
Okay, but yes, I thank you again. I don't know where to go from here.
Y'all are
thanks
so
for
great
hanging out with us and putting up with our kids coming out and.
Oh, that was nothing.
Rambling.
Yeah. Is there anything that you want to promote? Where can they find you on the internet? All that jazz.
I mean, people can follow me on Twitter. Mostly I just complain.
Oh, she's not wrong.
I don't. I got my good boring state job. Like, I don't need it competing on Twitter. I usually keep my stuff locked up tight because I want to be able to use the F word and not have people be like, but you're a Catholic.
Yeah, no, for sure.
What no,
about
I'm
you,
not...
Adam?
Yeah, I mean, so one of the things, you know, like I'm very fortunate that sometimes people want me to come flap my gums for them.
Talk.
So just come talk. And so I do a lot of that. I do like some consulting and stuff like that. And I try and share some thoughts or things that I think. I have a website. If anybody cares about that kind of stuff, it's thelifeofadam.com, which is my website. And it's also
available to do retreats. He's fantastic at running retreats for mostly like middle school, high school, some like young adult, college ager stuff. He's done speaking gigs. Blah, blah, blah. He's done speaking gigs for adults at the parish. Not so much like running retreats for adults, but lots of speaking gigs for adults.
Are you his publicist? Is he paying you?
To... Nice. Agent Kat.
And he does a good talk. Like when you bring Adam in to do a talk, you're gonna learn. You're gonna laugh.
You're gonna learn today.
And you're gonna
learn today.
Gonna learn today.
Yay, Kevin Hart, they get it.
No,
full
no,
circle. No.
For a little while, Gus kept going. All right. No, I says so like every time I do it, I wind up being more
racist.
Matthew McConaughey,
and less.
All right.
That's so good.
So
cool. Well, all of that will be in the show notes. Mm-hmm. We want to thank, yeah, exactly. You can find everything there that we talked about for their stuff in the show notes. And we want to thank Nathaniel so much for editing our podcast and making it sound semi-decent.
He's so cool. And yeah, just thank you again to the Eichelbergers. We are so happy to have y'all. And
we also want to thank Elizabeth.
Elizabeth. I'm still getting used to her.
Yes, it's okay.
I'm sorry.
Who are our friends, the Eichelbergers, now?
Yeah, Kate knows Elizabeth, apparently. So
exactly.
That's
so
awesome.
We want to thank you, Elizabeth, for being our producer. Okay. And we also go follow us on Instagram @isineffect. And make sure that you follow us on YouTube, youtube.com/thatcatholiccouple. And you will hear us next Monday.
Stay holy, my friends.
Deuces.
Adios.